And God said, "Let us make a man in our image. Let's give him power to rule over all the earth. Let him be master of all of the birds of the air and the fish of the sea. Let him be able to call to the wanderers of the plains to come to him. Give to him a mind that will be able to probe the secrets of the rocks and the trees. Let him be able to investigate the physical laws of nature and understand the remotest atom that floats in the breeze. Let each day pass and have him become more and more like us. Let's give him a mind that will be able to create, gardens and music and poems and paintings and statues. And yes, let us give to man the ability to be able to create life itself. Let us give to man the ultimate joy of holding in his arms a new life, a life that he has made." And so God made man. Man, a creature designed to be like God, even to the point of bringing new life into existence, that new life might also be like God. Now, God could have made a man so that he would have produced life of himself, like some corn stalk. He could have made man that he could have produced life by using his intelligent mind to bring some formula together. But God made man to produce life out of a love experience. Man, if he is to be like God, must be a loving creature. Because man himself was created as a result of a love relationship that existed within the Trinity. They loved each other so much that they wanted to make more creatures like them to love. And therefore, if man is to make life, he must make it under these same conditions, out of love. And love is only love if it is shared with someone else. Therefore, God gave to man woman, a creature to love and to be loved by. And out of that love would come new life. A child was not to be the product of one person. It was to be the fruit of two who were deeply in love. And so, in the growing shadows of a Friday afternoon, Adam fell asleep. He was awakened in a few moments by a sight that he would never forget. The perfect woman. In the soft light of early evening, she smiled through radiantly vibrant eyes and soft, delicately tinted lips and cheeks. He felt the wisp of satin-soft hair that glowed in the gentle sunbeams of the evening. He smelled the fragrance of 1,000 crushed rose petals. Ah, paradise was complete. And for her, suddenly she was there. Suddenly she was in the midst of paradise unending. There was so much to see, so much to touch and feel and to explore and to smell. And suddenly she saw him. There he was, resting under a tree. And he was magnificent. He was beautiful, but in a different way than she was beautiful. His beauty was the aura of strength and power, and yet a gentleness on his face. And so, in the coolness of the evening, she reached out and she touched him. And he moved to her touch, opening his eyes to dwell upon her. And in them was the sparkle of intelligent love that promised faithfulness for eternity. And then they realized that they were not alone. For the Creator himself was standing there with them. And in the magic moment there in the garden, a wedding was held. With the Creator himself as the pastor and choruses of thrushes and warblers to sing the special music. The whole universe was watching. And as the Lord said, I now pronounce you man and wife, choirs sang all through the universe with joy. And God said to Adam and Eve, be fruitful and multiply. I want you to fill this garden and this world with children. I want you to love each other in every way. And so it was in the beginning that God created marriage. Oh, how very appropriate and fitting that the very first miracle that Jesus performed during his ministry was performed at a wedding. You know, marriage was very important to God in the scheme of mankind. It's very interesting to study the numerous references that Jesus makes to love and to marriage. You know, Jesus was a man in every way. Our Sabbath school lessons this quarter have tried to point that out to us. You know, one evening Jesus was sitting on the hillside and he said, foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man does not have a place to lay his head. In the evenings when he was tired, after the multitudes had pressed on him all day long for this miracle and that miracle and for this parable and that sermon, he would sit on the hillsides and he would see other men going home from their day's work. Going home to a house where there was someone to love him, someone to talk to him, someone to care about his needs. Jesus longed for the sweet companionship that he had designed for man to have. But he himself could not have it. Jesus himself could never be married. For if Christ had married, the Christian church would have been fragmented into thousands of little pieces in the following centuries. For this person would appear on the scene of action with a genealogical chart, and he would prove somehow that he was related to Jesus, and therefore if Jesus was divine, then he too was divine by genealogy, and you should worship him. And there would be 100 such charlatans running around the world. No, it was not for Jesus. He had to look at the best gift that he had ever given to man, and himself had to forego it. But he had deep regard for marriage. You read in the Sermon on the Mount what he has to say about divorce, about faithfulness, about adultery. You know, there was a day in the church when a pastor could stand up and he could speak about divorce, and he would step on very few toes in his congregation because divorce was a thing for the world. But that is no longer the case in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. For divorce has crept within our doors, and the divorce statistics for the Seventh-day Adventist Church are very little different than the divorce statistics for the world. What a tragedy. What a tragedy. It is no wonder that we are not growing like we should. It is no wonder that people are not flocking to our church trying to get inside. For when they look at us, they don't see anything much different than what they have, except that we keep the Sabbath. If we could offer to the community a model of good, solid Christian homes, a place where families would be happy and dwell together with Jesus Christ, we couldn't keep the people out of here. People are longing to be happy. And the day that we can show them that Christianity works in our homes and makes us happy is the day that they will want to come and be a part of us. I saw a photograph the other day that just really caught me off guard. It was a photograph of a beautiful family. Good-looking man, good-looking woman, several nice-looking children sitting around them. And then at the bottom was this caption, and it said, "This family will self-destruct in 5 years." We have long looked at the law as a negative standard. A law that says, thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do that, thou shalt not commit adultery. But you know, it's not really that. God is not telling us so much that we should not commit adultery as He is telling us in a positive way, love your mate, love your partner. Love that person who you have promised to keep only unto yourself as long as you both shall live. I have long since decided that people don't really mean their marriage vows. When the pastor says, till death do you part, they interpret that means, until I get tired of you. You know, Jesus said adultery is not just a physical act. It is a condition of the mind. All through the Old Testament, the word adultery is used synonymously with idolatry. Every time Israel went after false gods and set up their idols, God says, you have committed adultery, spiritual adultery. You have transferred your love from me to this stupid little stone. And therefore, adultery is not a physical act of union with some other person, as much as it is preferring another person above your partner. And therefore, I say this, that there are many people who have committed adultery who have never gone into a strange bedroom. All they have done is preferred someone over their marriage partner. And that someone, most usually, is oneself. The day you love yourself more than you love your partner, you have broken the law. And so often this is the case for marriage problems. 99% of all of the people who come to me to talk to me about the problems in their home all revolve around the fact that they are more concerned about their feelings than they are about their partner's feelings. They're concerned about what's happening to number one. And by number one, they're pointing to themselves, when number one really should be that one that they married. When you stop striving to be a good lover in the home, when you stop striving to do something every day to make your partner happy, is the day that you have begun to transgress the seventh commandment. It behooves us to be creative and imaginative in our lovemaking. It behooves us to think about doing something special for our partners, to break the humdrum of life, because life can become very humdrum. We can get tied up in getting up in the morning just in time to get to work, just in time to get home to get in bed again. Have you ever done something exciting for your partner just for fun? Have you ever gotten up in the morning and before your partner and taken a bar of soap and have gone over to the mirror that they use regularly and have written across the mirror, "Good morning, I love you this morning." You know you won't break the mirror doing that. The soap will wash off. When I go out for weeks of prayer, sometimes about midweek I'll be going through my suitcase trying to, find clean underwear. Tucked down in a sock somewhere, I'll feel a piece of paper. And I'll reach down in that sock and pull out the piece of paper. And oh, how my heart overflows, for there will be a little note that says, "I miss you. I wish you were home." Little things. Nothing expensive, nothing important. In terms of money, but important in terms of love. Ever sneak up behind your wife and just kiss her on the back of the neck? That's all. Nothing great, just that. The home is so important. The home is the heart of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And it is the home that has been under severe attack by Lucifer in our church. If he can break down our homes, he has broken the back of this church. Our homes were given to us by God to give and to share love in those homes. And to experience in those homes the joy of creating new life. Of bringing ourselves together and producing a brand new life. Adam and Eve came together. And God had originally designed childbirth to be the most fantastic, pleasurable experience that a woman was ever to have. A complete fulfillment. It was only because of sin that pain became involved. And so it was that the day that Eve lay in the coolness of the grass and her face turned ashen white and sweat broke out upon her forehead in great beads. When she had never felt pain like this before in her life, and she bites her bottom lip and she pushes and she grunts and suddenly it is over. And she hears a cry. And now, almost instantaneously, the pain is forgotten. For it is replaced with the sheer joy of looking down and seeing Cain. Oh, how she took Cain in her arms. And I love what the Bible says. The Bible says Adam looked and Eve looked and they said, "Behold, we have made a man." Fantastic. We have made a man. And he opened his mouth and he started to cry. And I wonder if they thought they had made a mistake somewhere because he didn't have any teeth. Oh, yeah, I tell you, birth, the birth process has got to be so...
When I was a little boy, I had a dog that had puppies. Now, I want to tell you, I went out one day, and I just laid down on the floor in the middle of all those puppies, and they crawled all over me, and they were licking my ears and my nose, and it was, you know, birth, new life, just the joy of it all. My boy Eric, he was born on a Friday night, late in the middle of the night. After the ordeal was all over, I went down to the car outside the hospital and took a nap. And I remember waking up in the morning and going back in the hospital. And as I came in the room where my wife was, I heard her singing. And I stuck my head in the door, and she had Eric in her arms. And I said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "We're having Sabbath school." You don't understand what I'm talking about, but some of you out here do, don't you? I can remember when Mike was born. I held him in my hand, and he was all white and gooey. I held him in my hands, and he was... And I remember saying, "Little fellow, I don't know what kind of a man you are going to be, but your name shall be Michael. And may somehow God give you the grace to live up to that name, Michael." What a thrill. Parenthood. Motherhood. You know, it's awful to grow old and not have children, isn't it? We used to have some neighbors that lived across the street from us who had retired, and they had never been blessed with children. And you know, no one ever came to visit them. They just grew old, and no one came. Never did the house resound with the thump thump and the bang and the screams and the crying of grandchildren. It was so empty for them. There was a lady in Waterloo. I remember as her pastor several years ago when I was there. She was all alone. No one ever came to visit her. And I remember this week I was sitting in a committee with Bob and some of the men, and Bob shared the news with us that this dear sister had passed away. And I was lost in reverie for a few moments, my thoughts, as I wondered if anyone ever came to see her before she died, or if she just died. You see, she had no children. Some of us this morning are fortunate enough to have our mothers with us here. Some of us this morning, our mothers are far away. For some of us this morning, our mothers are resting, waiting for Jesus to come. But you know, we can close our eyes and we can remember our mothers. There are certain keys that open our memories. Sometimes they catch us by surprise. The sound of a certain song will remind us of our mother. The smell of a certain perfume will remind us of our mother. Do you remember how beautiful your mother is? My mother's beautiful. She is. Strange how all of us have beautiful mothers, isn't it? A few weeks ago, one evening, we came home from a meeting and in sheer exhaustion plopped down and turned on the television set and a Miss Universe contest was going on. I sat there and enjoyed it thoroughly. And they finally came up to the winner. And the woman was crowned and everybody was crying and jumping around with joy over because she had won. And Michael turned to me and he said, "If our mom had been there, she would have won." Do you ever why mothers are always beautiful? The reason for it is because they really are beautiful, aren't they?
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. International copyright, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage you. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.